The following audio is from The Village Church. More information about The Village Church is available at www.thevillagechurch.net.
From darkness to light, this is the story we all share as the people of God. He draws us out to draw us in. From the birth of Israel to the church today, God delivers and dwells with his people. This story began several thousand years ago, and it began with a promise from God to Abraham that he would make his offspring more numerous than the stars in the sky, a great nation who would one day dwell in the promised land. More than 400 years passed, and Abraham's descendants had not seen this promise fulfilled. Instead, the Israelites lived as foreigners in the land of Egypt. Fearing that the Hebrews would grow into a mighty nation and overtake them, the Pharaoh of Egypt forced them to work as slaves. But Israel continued to grow. In response, the Egyptians increased their oppression of God's people, and Pharaoh gave a terrible decree. Every son born to the Hebrews would be thrown into the river. But a Levite couple defied this order, trusting God's will for their son's life. And God did have a plan for this child. Pharaoh's daughter found the baby and took pity on him. She named him Moses because he was drawn out of the water. As Moses grew older and saw the suffering of his people, anger burned within him. When he witnessed an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, Moses killed the man and fled Egypt to hide in the desert. Years passed, and Moses made a new life for himself in Midian. Then one day, the voice of the Lord called out to him from a burning bush. God told Moses that he saw the persecution of his people in Egypt, and he heard their cries. He promised to deliver the Israelites from slavery, and he commanded Moses to go before Pharaoh on their behalf. Moses was terrified, so God sent Moses' brother Aaron to go with him. The brothers went before Pharaoh, performing signs and wonders, but Pharaoh would not listen. So God brought down plagues upon Egypt. Yet Pharaoh's heart remained hard as stone. To prepare for the 10th and final plague, the Hebrews marked their doors with the blood of spotless lambs. That night, the angel of death passed through the kingdom, killing the firstborn child of every Egyptian household that did not bear the mark, including Pharaoh's. Heartbroken, Pharaoh told the Israelites to go. They were finally set free, and the Spirit of God led the people out and toward the promised land. But Pharaoh's grief soon turned to rage. He changed his mind and then commanded the Egyptian army to pursue them. When the Israelites came to the Red Sea, Moses lifted his staff to the sky and the waters parted. The Hebrews passed through the towering waves and the Egyptians were swallowed by the sea. God had indeed drawn his people out of bondage, out of darkness, and into the light of his presence. The story of Israel is the story of us today. We are God's people. He draws us out of our sin, our Egypt, and draws us into his presence, into relationship with him.
Well, good morning. How are you? Wow, that's the most responsive you've ever been. Testify. All right. If you got a Bible, turn to Exodus chapter 6, and we'll read verses 1 through 13. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one in the seat in front of you. As you're turning there, let me introduce myself. My name is Jamin Roller. I am one of the pastors over at our Plano campus, but I have the joy of being with you guys here this weekend here in Flower Mound, America. So we will read through these 13 verses together and then unpack them. 6:1, but the Lord said to Moses, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land." God spoke to Moses and said to him, "I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will bring you into the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord. Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel, but they did not listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. So the Lord said to Moses, go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the people of Israel go out of his land. But Moses said to the Lord, behold, the people of Israel have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me? For I am of uncircumcised lips. But the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a charge about the people of Israel and about Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. So if you've been with us for the last few weeks, especially if you were with us last week, you know what's happened in the narrative. Where we are in the narrative is that God has appeared to Moses and drawn Moses out and commissioned him to his service. And then Moses went and had this message of freedom and this message of hope and this message of liberation to the people. And the people get all excited. And then Moses goes into Pharaoh to draw a line in the sand and deliver God's message. And Pharaoh hears that message and he responds by increasing the cruelty and increasing the suffering. And so you have Moses and these people standing here expecting God to do something great. And in reality, what they hear and what they experience and what they get is increased suffering. And so last week, Matt walked us through just this place of disappointment and how harsh and how deflating and discouraging that must have been. And I thought about my own life, and I thought about how often in my life I try to avoid that place of disappointment, right? When harsh reality shatters hopeful expectation. I've actually spent a lot of energy, a lot of thought trying to stay out of that place of harsh reality, right? In fact, I met my wife 12 years ago, and I was at a friend's house on a Friday night, and in walks this beautiful young woman. And I was super intimidated. I knew she was way out of my league, but I decided I was going to go for it. And so I had, true story, I had written a love song called Jello. And I decided to sing her that song on that night. And just by an act of God's sovereign mercy, it actually worked. And so she started talking to me. And we spent maybe 30 minutes talking. And at the end of the night, I'm outside in the driveway. I'm on the phone. I'm actually talking to my mom, and she leaves, this beautiful young woman leaves and starts walking towards her car, and she sees me and she turns and she walks towards me. And I thought, okay. And I was on the phone with my mom, but I kind of wanted to put out a different vibe than that. And so I'm like, hey, baby, hold on one second. And my mom was super confused. And she walks up and she says, hey, I enjoyed talking to you tonight. And I thought, I think this girl's into me. And then I thought, she must have really low standards. And she did, praise God, she did. So a couple months later, we went on our very first date, and I took her to this really romantic, really fancy place called Chili's. We sit down, we order our food, and I open my mouth, and I just inundate this young woman with question after question after question. What do you think about God? What are your views on theology? What's your home life like, right? All the essentials. Do you love the Dallas Cowboys? All the things that are super important. What is your view for family? What are your thoughts on marriage? And to this day, when my wife describes that first date, if you were to ask her, what was it like? She says, it felt like a job interview. Why? Because I knew on that night at that fancy restaurant that that woman could really hurt me one day. I had all of these hopeful expectations for where things were headed, and I knew that they could be shattered by a harsh reality. And I thought if I asked the right questions and I asked them in the right way, I could protect myself from that. I could avoid that place. And I wonder how many of you, like me, in a place of candor and honesty, would say, you know what, I feel like I've had that conversation with God. At some point in my Christian life, maybe not out loud, but in the quiet of my heart, here are all of my questions, here are all the things that I want to make sure I'm expecting, here are all the things that I want kind of guaranteed to me, because I don't want to get to that place where I have all these hopeful expectations and they're shattered by a harsh reality. I want to avoid that space. And what we know, if you've been married for any length of time, if you've been a Christian for any length of time, that place is unavoidable. It is unavoidable. And so that's where Moses is. And Moses goes to God in that place of harsh reality and airs his grievances and asks these questions. And hear me, in that place of harsh reality, God is not silent. He speaks. And that's what we read, is that this is his response to Moses. And so I think the question for us this morning is not, how do I avoid that place? The question for us this morning is, what does God want me to know when I'm there? What does God want me to know? What's going to pull me through? And so what we'll see in God's response is that there are three aspects to God's response. There is a problem that he highlights. There is a story, and there is a prize. Problem, story, and prize. Look at verse 1 again with me, chapter 6. But the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand, he will send them out. With a strong hand, he will drive them out of his land. God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. Does it sound familiar? Like the things that God is saying right here to Moses, does it sound familiar? It should. It's redundant. God is repeating himself here. Why? He's not telling Moses new information. He's telling Moses things that Moses has already heard from the mouth of God. Why? Because when things went different than Moses expected them to go, Moses is exposed. Here's what I mean by that. When Moses goes to Pharaoh and Moses says, hey, Pharaoh, I am the Lord, the great I am. I want you to let the people go. And here's what we're going to do. And what is Pharaoh's response? Pharaoh says, who is God? I know our gods. I know the Egyptian gods. I know that as Pharaoh, I am a god, but I don't know the God that you're talking about. And then Moses, the suffering increases, the cruelty increases. Moses goes back to God and Moses says things like, God, why did you send me? Why did you lie to us? You haven't begun to rescue us. You've caused evil for your people. And God responds to him and says what? I am the Lord. In other words, you don't know me the way that you should. In other words, you sound a lot like Pharaoh. Because here's the reality. Moses has a problem. Egypt or Israel has a problem. And their problem is bigger than the Egypt that's around them. Their problem is the sin that's inside of them. They were not just victims of an external evil. They are themselves sick with sin. And any time their expectations aren't met, any time the disappointment sets in, the true condition of their heart is exposed. And it's the first thing that we see coming out of Moses and coming out of the people. There is a bondage that you're under that has nothing to do with Egypt. So I grew up in a Christian home. By Christian home, I mean I grew up in a gospel-saturated, grace-laden home. My mom and dad did a marvelous job raising us in the fear and admonition of the Lord. So much so that my prayer is that one day my children can stand and say the same thing about me with as much sincerity as I just said that about my mom and dad to you. But that did not mean that things weren't a little bit weird sometimes, right? One day my mom came home with this new technology called curse-free TV. Google it. Here's how it works. You put this little box on top of the TV, and it connects to your TV's closed captioning. And anytime there is an inappropriate word in the programming, on the show, in the movie, or whatever, it would mute the TV, and then the closed captioning would pop up, and you would read that sentence, except the cuss word was removed and a substitute was put in its place. And so it would go like this. Like if it was gonna say some word like, well, let me try to do this and also keep my job. If it was gonna say some sort of word that none of us have ever used, right? And it was gonna say something like, you stole money from me, you're such a blank, right? Instead, it would mute the TV, the closed caption would pop up, and it'd say, you stole money from me, you are such a clown. And it was some sort of word like that. And it just had this way of ruining every movie, right? Or even there's some movies that just wasn't even worth watching. Like I tried to watch the movie Good Will Hunting and it's just reading a book the whole time, right? That doesn't make sense. There are also like other things that were confusing about it. Instead of saying the word sex, it would substitute in the word hugs. And so I'd be at church and someone would come up and be like, hey, can I give you a hug? And I'm like, is this a trap? Like, are you testing me right now? So one day, my brother and I are arguing and just it gets heated and heated and heated. And finally he says something that just really hurts me and he turns and walks out of the room. And as he's walking out of the room, just this anger wells up inside of me and I yell at him, Luke, you're such a clown. Got him, right? What did I do? I cussed at him. In a really lame way, I profaned him. Like, it may not have been an inappropriate word or whatever, but the condition of my heart was the same. That's what I was trying to accomplish, was to curse him. That's what I was doing. Because the reality is, just like Moses, just like Israel, us, we're in the same boat. There is this evil that's outside of us from which we could be protected, but there's also an evil inside of us from which we need to be saved. And it's especially in those moments of disappointment, especially in those moments of harsh reality, that we see and learn what's coming out. We're exposed in those moments. There's a helpful illustration that I heard long ago. Imagine that I had some sort of cup in my hand right now and it's full of liquid. And maybe you got upset with me and you just decided to come up here and knock that cup out of my hand and there's just liquid that pours out all over the stage. Now, you would be responsible for knocking the cup out of my hand, but I would be responsible for what liquid comes out. Why? Because I'm the one that put it there. So if you knock the cup out of my hand and water spills out everywhere, it's because I put water in there. If you knock the cup out of my hand and coffee spills out everywhere, it's because I filled it up with coffee. And in our lives, we cannot control and are not responsible for when we get knocked over, but we are responsible for every single drop that comes out. And that's not a popular idea in our modern culture. The popular thing to say is that, you know what, you made me angry, or living with this person makes me crazy, or that person wore that thing and it made me lust. And that's a popular idea, but it's not a biblical idea, because Jesus says, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the overflow of the heart comes envy and anger and jealousy and rivalries and lust. And so the first thing that God does is confronts Moses. I'm repeating myself here, Moses, and in my repetition, your heart is exposed. You don't know me like you should. You got knocked over, and pay attention to what's coming out of you. Pay attention. Now, it's not to shame him. The suffering he's going through is completely understandable. His reaction is even completely understandable, but it's something to pay attention to. And then he goes on, and we'll read again. Well, let's read verses 3-8 together. Not only is there a problem, but there's a story. He says, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. We'll come back to that. It's an important verse. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will deliver you from slavery to them. I will redeem you with outstretched arm, great acts of judgment. I'll take you to be my people. I will be your God. You shall know that I am the Lord your God, who's brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I'll bring you into the land, verse 8, that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord. Moses comes to God. And Moses is wanting to talk about everything that's happening in the present. Moses wants to talk about Pharaoh. Moses wants to talk about slavery. And in God's response, who is God talking about? He's talking about Abraham. He's talking about Isaac and Jacob. He's talking about a covenant. He's talking about Canaan and this land that was promised. What is he doing? He is reminding and informing Moses of this profound truth. There's a story. there is more going on here than just what you're going through, Moses. There's a story, a profound reality that I have welcomed you in. And I know that right now, all you can see is your pain, but this goes before your pain and it will go after your pain. There is this story here that you've been invited in, Moses. And so I think what's important about that is that that really is the desire of the human heart, to be a part of something that's bigger than just you, right? This last week, all of the Village Church staff was at staff retreat. We do it every year. And let me just say this as an aside. Anytime I'm together with all of our staff, there are two things in me that grow. The first is the respect that I have for the men that lead this church. They are just sincere and authentic, and they passionately love Jesus and love you. And then the second thing that grows is the love that I have for the people that I get to minister alongside of, just gifted and godly and humble men and women. And I don't say that to you as a staff member. I say that to you as a church member, because I want you to know, gosh, this place is special. And what God is doing here is just unique and just really precious. It is a treasure to be here for such a time as this. Close parentheses. So I was at staff retreat with the staff members, and one of the guys around the table during lunch said, hey, if you could live in any year in the past, when would you live? You could go back and you could just insert yourself anywhere in history. Where would you go? And so the answers were, you know, I'd go to the 1940s and I'd fight Nazi Germany. Or, you know, put me in the 50s or the 60s so I could fight racial discrimination. No one said, you know, just drop me in 93. I can just kind of lay low and listen to bad music and not really make a splash, right? No one said that. Every answer was connected to the opportunity to make a splash, to be a part of something big, to fight injustice, to live our lives in such a way that it affects change. But what's true, to go back to any of those stories and to play a role in any of those stories, it would not have been painless. Part of what we're saying is I would sign up for some discomfort. And so what God is saying here to Moses, he's reminding him, there's a beautiful story that makes your pain worth it, but it's not painless. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be filled with comfort. And so he mentions Abraham. And I mean, just ask Abraham, Moses. Ask him if being a part of the story was painless. You remember when he tried to pawn his wife off twice and I was faithful? Remember that time I called him up on that mountain with his son Isaac, who he loved? And he was finally walking in obedience, and I provided the ram as the substitute. And there's a story there, Moses, and I know you don't know this part, but that story in itself points towards the day when I am on a mountain with my own son. And on that day, I will not spare him in his obedience so that on this day I can spare you in your sin. There's a story. Not just a story of what's happened with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and the covenant that God made and the promises that he made that he's fulfilling even now in Moses' time, but a story of what he will do. He says this in verse 6, I'm going to liberate you. You are going to, as much as you don't feel like it's true now, you are going to get out of this. I'm going to redeem you. And I'm going to make your enemies pay the price for that redemption. And then I'm going to adopt you. You will no longer be slaves. You'll be sons and daughters. And then I'm going to bless you, dwell with you, give you a land, a place to call your own. And so he paints this picture, not just of the past, but a picture of the future. And the future is headed to a really good place. There's a good life coming. It is so important to remember, because one of the most discouraging things you could possibly hear if you're in pain, if you're in that place of harsh reality, one of the worst things you could hear as you're hurting is that it means nothing. How devastating, how discouraging is that to be in that place of hurt and for someone to come along and say, you know what, it's meaningless. It's meaningless. And so to come along and for God to say, Moses, I know that it hurts, but it has weight to it. It has value to it. It's part of something. Jim Elliot was a missionary to the country of Ecuador. On his second interaction with the tribe that he was ministering to, He and his missionary friends were speared to death on the riverbank. Before he left on that trip where he lost his life, he had a conversation with his wife, Elizabeth. And his wife asked him a question. Jim, if they attack you, will you use your guns? And he said, no, we won't. And his wife asked him, why, Jim? And he looked at her and he said, because we are ready for heaven and they are not. He told a story. There's something that's going on that's just bigger than my life. There's a story that's going on here that's bigger than my pain, bigger than my fears, bigger than my risk. There's a story. There's a heaven that I'm ready for. There's a hell that we don't want them to see. And so my life is playing out in something that's much bigger than me. And so as Elizabeth Elliot dealt with the pain of his death in the coming days and coming weeks and coming months and coming years, she knew that she knew that she knew that he did not die in vain because his death was part of something. That's beautiful. You know, I think sometimes for us, God allows some pain and allows disappointment, not just to remind us of the story, but to remind us that while we are a deeply loved character, we're not the main character. And while we are a deeply loved character, we don't get to write the plot. But not only does that he remind him of a story, he tells him in his response, man, there's a prize. Six verses that we read in God's response. There's something that God says five times in those six verses, and here it is. He says, I am the Lord. He starts with, I am the Lord. He ends with, I am the Lord. In the middle, he says, I'm doing this so that you may know that I am the Lord. And then there is that verse, verse 3. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. It does not mean that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob never heard God's name, Yahweh. That's the name that he's saying. I am the Lord. I am Yahweh. I am the great I am is what it means. He's not saying Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob never heard that name. He's saying this, that when all of this is over, when you see everything that I'm going to do, you will know me in ways that Abraham never came close. You will know me as Savior and know me as Redeemer and know me as faithful in ways that they never got to see, never came close to tasting and touching. In other words, when you're done with all of this, the prize for you is that you'll know me with greater clarity and greater intimacy. A couple weeks ago, my little girl, she's three, she was walking around with a blanket on her head. I'm not sure how it got, I may or may not have put it on her head, doesn't matter, but she's walking around with a blanket on her head, and she falls and she hits the bookshelf. Blanket comes off, and there's this deep gash in her forehead and blood coming down her face. And my son, who's 5 and a half, we've been through this with him twice. Not the blankets, not to say, you're like, get rid of your blankets, man, come on. But he's fallen, he's hit his forehead, same thing, gash. And so we know it's coming. We know that we're going to take him to the doctor, and we're going to pray that the doctor comes in and says, you know what, it's not that bad, let's just do a Band-Aid. And in reality, the doctor's going to say, ah, it's pretty deep, we need stitches. And so then we know what we're going to do is we're going to hold our child on this table while some random person puts metal in their forehead, and they look at us like, why are you betraying me, parent, right? And so that's where we were headed, in the car. I'm in the front driving, dreading what is to come. My wife is in the back with our daughter who's crying, and my son's sitting next to them. And my son, Asher, says, Dad, I think I should pray. I said, okay. And so he starts his prayer like he starts every prayer. God, please help Addie. Please heal her. He said, it's super bad, God. We need to work on his bedside manner. Then he prayed for me, prayed for my wife, prayed for Addie, said, God, I pray that this never happens again. Hey, look, I don't tell you that to tell you that I've got like perfect Christian kids. Earlier in the day, he threw a fire truck at her head. Or maybe it was an ambulance, which is more ironic. I mean, parenting is wins and losses, right? At the end of the day, you know, we made it. She got stitches and the kids are in bed, and I'm sitting there talking with my wife, And as we reflect on the day, we both went back to that moment, his prayer, and just, that was special. It was special that's what came out of him. In that, I know that it was a small-scale panic moment for the Roller family, but in that small-scale panic moment, I got to see things coming out of him. I got to know him in ways that I would not have gotten to had the afternoon just been normal. Now, aren't your meaningful relationships like that? I mean, the people that mean the most to you, you've been through something with them. I mean, I hear story after story. Man, yeah, we got some really bad news, but when we got that bad news, gosh, my wife was a rock. And I saw her in ways that I never thought I would see her. Or man, I was just in the pit, but when I was in there, there was a friend who just stayed in there with me till I got out. And I saw things coming out of that friend that I would not have gotten to see if things were normal. It's those moments of clarity about your relationships that often come by way of trial and pain. And that's what God does. God says, look, I know it hurts, but I'm going to posture you to see me and know me as the great I am. And that's what you get. That's the prize. That's the reward. So God is that light in the middle of the room that when all of the other lights are on, that light is easy to ignore. But when things start to go dark, that light is all you can see. And as things continue to darken around you, that light becomes brighter and brighter, and it ultimately becomes so beautiful that it not only makes the darkness bearable, it makes the darkness worth it. I mean, if Israel gets out of Egypt and they don't know God, they're still slaves just without the chains. But to know him, that's the prize. That's the reward. What does this look like? I mean, like 21st century, how does this play out? A few years ago, I had a day in pastoral ministry that I'll remember for the rest of my days of pastoral ministry. I met with two men, and a guy comes in, and he had just lost his job. And gosh, he was mad. He was mad at his job. He was mad at his boss. He was mad at his coworkers. And ultimately, he was mad at God. And at the end of that meeting, he said, man, I just don't see why God would do this to me. There are so many things I wanted to do that I can't do now. See what happened? Harsh reality shatters hopeful expectations. His cup gets knocked over, and what comes out? What comes out? He talks about a story, but it's not God's story. He talks about his story, all of my plans, all the things I wanted to do. And then he talks about God, not in ways that he knows him intimately, but in ways that makes it appear as though he's distant and can't be found. Why would he do this? And listen, I'm not saying that I would be in any better place. Really, I'm not saying I would respond any differently. I just don't know. I'm just telling you what happened. Because after that meeting, I drove to McKinney and I met with a man who's not a member of our church. He attends another church, but we just were meeting to get to know one another, and he shares his story with me. And part of his story is one day his teenage daughter came home sick. And the next day she went to the doctor, and by Friday she had passed away. No warning. And as I'm sitting there processing this information, like scanning through my pastoral experience to try to offer something to say, he keeps talking. And I'm blown away by the words that come out of his mouth. Yeah, next, he keeps talking. He says, you know, she never dated and was never married, and I would have loved to walk her down the aisle, but I rejoice that the first husband to hold her was Jesus. He says, it hurt, and it still hurts, but I know God in ways that you never will, and I would not change that. You see what happened? Harsh reality shatters hopeful expectation. His cup gets knocked over, and what comes out? He talks of God's story. She went to be with Jesus. And then he says that I know the great I am in ways that I would have not known him had this not happened. He says, you know what? God took something from me, and in that empty space, he gave me himself. And that's the prize. And my prayer, friends, is that when my dark day comes, not if but when, I pray that I am a man who is both deeply hurt and also deeply rooted in the story and the name of the great I am. So Moses takes this message, this speech, God's response, and he says to the people, he recounts it to the people. And let's look at verse 9. Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel, but they did not listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. Broken spirit and harsh slavery. When it talks about their broken spirit, I think part of that comes when we misunderstand or get confused about or forget the pattern that exists in the Christian life. And here's what I mean by that. The pattern of the Christian life is that upon salvation, you get both God and a promise of the good life. So you get God, you get relationship with God, you get closeness with God, and then you get the promises of salvation, the promises of the good life. Some of those promises are immediate. No shame, no guilt, no chasm between you and God. And then some of those promises are future. No tears, no pain, no death. Those are the ones you have to wait for. And I think when we forget that there is a waiting to the life of the Christian, when we forget that there's a waiting to the pattern of following Jesus, our spirits can break. That's what happens with Israel. They have that promise of the good life, and then they have that promise of getting God, getting to know the great I am. And when God makes those promises and their chains don't fall off instantaneously, their spirit breaks. Matt talked about it last week with John the Baptist. He got to baptize the Messiah, Emmanuel, God with us. And he got to wrap his arms around him and baptize him. And then he ends up in prison and he sends messengers. Jesus, is this what I thought it was going to be? Because my spirit is breaking here in prison. My little brother was born paralyzed from the waist down. He's been in a wheelchair his entire life. The day that he got saved, the day that God rescued him from sin and self, he heard from God, "You are my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." But he has yet to hear, "Rise, son, take up your mat and walk." He has to wait for that day. That day will come either on this earth or the new earth, but he has to wait for that day. And when we forget that there's a waiting, our spirits can break. Look, friends, the beauty of the Christian life is not that the happy ending is immediate. The beauty of the Christian life is that the happy ending is guaranteed. We know how this ends, not just how this ends, but we know how this ends for us. And that's where our hope is set and where our hope is centered. I mean, I think about the majority of the disappointments that I've had in my marriage, the majority of the harsh realities have come because I genuinely believed that God owed me marital bliss because I had done things mostly the right way. Surely we won't struggle like other couples struggle. Surely we'll get the good life. We'll get the happily ever after day one. Look, and if I could go back to that Chili's 12 years ago, and talk to that Jamin, I would tell him two things. I would say, "Look, Jamin, you need to take what little money you have and buy stock in Apple." That's going to be really helpful. And then I would say, "Jamin, you've got two hands. One is holding on to your hopeful expectations. The other is holding on to Jesus. Loosen around the former and tighten your grip around the latter. One you can't control and the other will never change." You don't get happily ever after. The day you get married, you get happily ever after the day Jesus comes back. And when we, just like Israel, when they hold tighter to that promise of the good life than they do to the great I am, our spirits can break. And then it says that they do not listen because not just their broken spirit, but their harsh slavery. It's all they can see. And look, I love just how honest the Bible is about the human experience. Because there is a kind of suffering, and some of you even right now are walking through it, and there is a kind of suffering. You see what's coming out of you, you know all of the things, and it's just so overwhelming that you're doing the best you can with where you're at. And God hears your groaning, and God hears your crying. I
promise you, brother. I promise you, sister. But there's this reality where the slavery is just so harsh that it's all you can see. And so what Israel decides is Israel decides that they are going to continue living like they belong to Pharaoh because they don't believe belonging to God will make a difference. And what happens? What does God do? God says, okay, if you're going to be like that, then I'll just go find another people to rescue. No. Verse 10 through 13, Moses, go and do what I asked you to do. Well, I can't. Moses, go and do what I asked you to do. What does God do? He continues being faithful to his promises. And I want you to see that at the end of chapter 4, how do the people respond? They hear God's word. At the end of chapter 4, they worship. And God knows what they're going to do at the end of chapter 5 when they ignore and when they reject. But at the end of chapter 4, they worship. And it does not read the people worshiped and God ignored them because he knew it would be short-lived. He receives their worship and continues being faithful to his promises. How kind is it of God that he does not view our present worship through the lens of our future failures? How kind is he in that? So they worship, and what does he do? He's faithful to his promises. And then at the end of chapter 5, they ignore and they reject, and what does he do? He's faithful to his promises. And so what we see from here on out, where the series is going to go in the next few weeks, is God starts to exercise his sovereign power over Israel's enemy for his fame and for their good. And so look, just as we wrap up here, are you living in a harsh reality? Maybe it's not that harsh. Are you living in a harsh reality? Maybe it's overwhelming. You just pay attention to what your heart's doing in that. Pay attention to what's coming out of you. But then not just that, but know that it's part of a story. My friend, it is meaningful, not meaningless. It's not senseless. And that might not mean a lot to you right now. You might not have a lot of confidence in that right now, but pay attention to this, that we are a people from all different stories and all different backgrounds. We're sitting here on a Sunday morning reading about what God did thousands of years ago in the lives of these people. And is that not evidence that his word never fails? I mean, because if that generation could stand up here and could speak to you now, I promise you they would say, he's right. God is faithful and true and good. The great I am is who he says that he is. But not only that, but maybe, just maybe, he's doing all of this to give you more of himself. Maybe, just maybe, he's doing all of this so that one day you look back at this and say, I know him. I know him in a way that I would not have known him if things were just normal. And it's worth it. Lord, we love you. We thank you for your goodness. I thank you for my brother and my sister in here that's just doing their best. Like that even being here right now is just such a tremendous act of faith. I thank you for them. I thank you for the men and women who are in this room and they're on the other side of the harsh reality. And they're looking back at that saying, gosh, I just see what you did, God, and I'm thankful. Or the man and woman in this room that's on the cusp of that, and you're preparing their hearts for that. Even now, even though we don't know it, even though we don't know what's going to look like, you're still preparing their hearts for that, and you are going to meet them in that place. I thank you for that, God. And then, as is always the case, Lord, just to be reminded of the harsh reality makes us long for the happy ending. So Jesus, would you return, please? We can't wait to see you again. We want you here now to make everything sad untrue. We love you and thank you. So hear me pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to audio from the Village Church, located in Texas. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. For more information about The Village Church, please visit us online at www.thevillagechurch.net.